This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
I'm Martin Strong, and let's get right to the consumer news of the week. Mounties in Richmond are warning people about online scams that it says have cost residents more than $16 million in losses since last year. It says its economic crime unit received 87 reports of online romance and investment schemes last year. A romance scheme is generally a thing where victims are lured through dating apps or social media and are groomed over weeks and months before getting scammed. Police say the trend, both the romantic and the investment schemes, has continued well into 2024, with 12 cases reported so far, amounting to nearly $500,000 in reported losses. The RCMP is urging people to be cautious online, especially when it comes to dating apps. Pets are big business these days, and it's not just dogs and cats. There are also the more, let's say, exotic pets. I'm talking the illegal exotic pets. The BC Conservation Service swooped in on a home in Chilliwack and seized a 9-foot-long Burmese python this week. They served a search warrant Tuesday night, found the big snake. The Conservation Service says this python, 9 feet long, is now being cared for in an undisclosed location as the investigation continues and they consider charges. The service also wants everybody to know that keeping an exotic animal as a pet is illegal in BC, and penalties can range from fines of up to $100,000 or a 1-year jail term. The Prime Minister was in town Wednesday, where he announced what he calls a Bill of Rights for people who rent. Justin Trudeau says it will include a new $15 million tenant protection fund that would help pay for provincial legal aid groups to help tenants dealing with unfair rent increases, bad landlords, and rent evictions. These new rules would also make sure renters who pay their rent on time get credit when it comes time for them to buy a home. And it's the event of the year for the cult of Apple, the people who are really into Apple products. And this week, the computer company, Apple, announced the dates of their annual Worldwide Developers Conference. It'll be June 10th to the 14th from the Apple campus in Cupertino, California. It's a big deal, because it's when Apple, in front of a live audience of rabid fans, announces things like their new iPhones or updates to the product line. And this year, it's really anticipated because it's expected that Apple will reveal its long-awaited artificial intelligence strategy and all the consumer products that will go along with that. Back in February, Apple CEO Tim Cook said Apple was investing significantly in AI and teased an AI-related announcement later this year. Another big deal about this year's conference is that Apple is also planning to reveal the first major software update to the Vision Pro. That's the virtual reality headset that Apple launched earlier this year. Ethiopia's biggest bank says up to $40 million U.S. was withdrawn or digitally transferred, all because of a glitch in its computer system. This glitch allowed customers of this Ethiopian bank to take out more money that they had in their accounts. And some people took advantage of that. Big time. A lot of the money was withdrawn by university students, and several universities are urging their students to return the cash. The amount lost initially was reported as high as $40 million. So far, they've gotten about 80% of that back. There are still a few hundred people who have not returned money that was not theirs. And back at home, the Union Gospel Mission is hosting its 34th annual Easter meal for people living on Vancouver's downtown east side this weekend. The mission says today's meal will be ham, scalloped potatoes, vegetables, and apple pie. They say the affordability crisis has hit the downtown east side really hard, and these holiday meals create a safe space for connection at a time when people may feel isolated. And coming up on Vancouver Consumer, what's going on in the real estate market? Up next, our friend John Carlson. You know him as Johnny Smartpoint. He's here. And we'll ask the question, are the good old days back in Lower Mainland real estate? That's when we come back on Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong. Stick around.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Strong, and it's time to talk real estate. And the question today is, are the good old days back in real estate? Because when you think about the last few years, they've been pretty strange. The COVID times, the prices that we're seeing on the Lower Mainland. It was an odd market. And it makes you wonder, are the good old days ever going to return? And are they already here? And to help us with that is our friend John Carlson. You know him as Johnny Smartpoint. You can find him online at johnnysmartpoint.com. He works all over the Lower Mainland. He sold more than 1,000 properties. I think we're up to like 1,200 properties all around the Lower Mainland. And John Carlson is with us now. Hello, John. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Martin. It's wonderful to be back with you on this Easter weekend. Thanks so much.
Yeah. And we were talking earlier about the good old days of real estate. I mean, in the old days, something would go for sale. It would stay there for a while. There'd be some negotiation back and forth. The home would sell. Everyone was happy. But it hasn't been like that for a very, very, very long time, it seems like, especially through COVID, you know, multiple offers on homes and stuff. But so that's my first question to you. Are the good old days of real estate back?
You know, Martin, I think that's a really timely and a great point, because I feel like we're definitely pointed in that direction. You know, as somebody who does this day after day and many, many years, you kind of realize that the market gets into some situations and it'll stay there for a little while. For instance, you mentioned the COVID crisis, and I remember when COVID first hit, the CMHC was talking about, oh, we're going to see a decline in real estate prices. This thing is going to crash. And of course, things went exactly the opposite way. And as you mentioned, the market has been pretty dynamic. And, I would say that the sellers are the ones that have had all the leverage in this market. Of course, we've got shortages of supply and all these issues. But, you know, lately, when I look at the statistics, and I'm really looking forward to these March statistics hitting when April, we'll talk about that on the next program when they come in. But the interesting thing about when you look at the market, both statistically and anecdotally, and by that I mean what's going on day to day in the market, in my own business and in the business of other agents that I'm dealing with on a daily, weekly basis, it does feel like we're kind of getting back into a balanced market. Statistically speaking, we're looking at listings that have always been a shortage of listings the last 5 or 6 years. Well, suddenly we're kind of up at the 10-year averages, where if you look at the standing inventory, the supply, the choices that buyers have, it's kind of average for the last, say, 10 years. Now, 10 years, you know, 10 years ago is a little different than 5 years ago, of course, but we're still in those numbers. And interestingly enough, being a supply and demand business, the demand is also at about a 10-year average. So what I'm seeing in this fairly early part of the year is buyers having some leverage in the market. And by that, I mean, they have some choices. They don't have to fight each other and throw open their wallets and dump all the money they have onto the table and say, you know, take it, please. Buyers now have choices. And so what I'm finding in the market, when I look at some of the sales I've had recently, whether I'm working for a buyer or a seller, it's really become a negotiator's market. And by that, I mean, a seller can't just take things for granted. You can't throw any price up there and expect somebody to come along and desperately, you know, throw money at you. And you have to also take into account the buyer's position. And buyers right now, everybody knows, of, you know, costs are up. We've got interest rates that are high. We've got food costs, fuel, insurance, all these other things. And I think that now that the buyers, the shoe might be starting to be on the other foot a little bit, so to speak, where when I have a listing and offers come in, even if it's a multiple offer situation, I'm looking at my client, they're the seller, and I'm saying, okay, none of these are slam dunk offers. what are we going to do about this? Maybe what we should do is flush all of them out as best we can and see if we can cultivate a situation where we can get those numbers and terms to where we want them. And really, you know, that's something that's kind of been missing from the market in the heated years where sellers had all the power, they had all the leverage. They said, take my house or don't, here's my number or more. And buyers have to comply. So your question, I think, is timely. It's right on. I wouldn't say the prices are back to where they were in the good old days.
Right.
But the supply and demand and the overall feel of the market is one that's much more balanced. And I think that's an important thing for both buyers and sellers to consider if they're out there in the market today.
Yeah, and that's an important point that you make about the prices, because the prices are holding pretty steady. So we're hearing about more inventory, there's more stuff to buy, and there's less multiple offers, and people, you know, don't have to fight to get these properties. But the prices are not going down that much. So it is, like you say, sort of a negotiation. So it's not like it's a fire sale.
Absolutely not. And you know, I think back to when I was young, I've got an analogy. Like I think in examples of what I see every day. And when I was young, you know, I used to lay on my bed and I'd blow a ping pong ball up into the air and I'd see how high I could push it and how long it would stay there. Sounds kind of crazy, but you know, young kid. And I realized that real estate pricing is a lot that way. You know, if the breath starts to slow down, the ball drops, and prices don't just stay up there because people have decided that real estate is expensive. Prices are held up by continuous pressure on the part of buyers. And as soon as that pressure changes, and that can take one of two things. It can be a volume change. Maybe I don't have as much breath anymore, or maybe the straw or the size that you're blowing through changes. So right now we're seeing a little bit less demand on the side of the buyers and less affordability. They just can't spend as much money. So we've had prices stay fairly constant. We had a little bit of a decline, I think 9 months in a row last year. And now we're in a little bit of an uptick again because the spring is happening. But with prices staying where they are, buyers are finding that, like, for instance, when I'm out looking in a segment with buyers, I'll be out again today looking at a certain segment. We look at some properties and we're not quite ready yet because our house sale hasn't firmed up. So we're not writing an offer yet. We will be soon. Some of them are selling in a day, 2 days, 3 days. They're getting multiple offers, not way over list price or maybe not even at list price, where others that aren't as attractive are languishing. I'm seeing some properties that are a little bit overpriced or they're disadvantaged in some way, and buyers don't have to jump at those properties. So pricing is not going to change dramatically anytime soon. In fact, I think it's probably leveled out for the year. There might be a little bit of upside left, and maybe interest rates go down a bit, and maybe that helps. But I think a lot of that's already baked into the cake. We're looking at a delayed reaction with higher interest rates where buyers have less affordability, but now they also have a little bit more choice. So we're never far away from a shortage in real estate, but suddenly buyers have a little bit more leverage.
And real estate in Vancouver and the Lower Mainland, kind of seems like if you compare it to ships, it's not a small ship that, you know, changes direction really suddenly. It's like a big freighter that, like a cargo ship that takes forever to turn left. Is that the way you see it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of political pressure now as well. You know, elected officials are under pressure. People are saying, hey, we need affordable housing. What do we do? And if you start to, you know, delve into the details on that and increasing supply, it's not an easy answer that you're going to solve overnight. It takes time. And that's another one of the big topics we're going to be talking about in a couple of weeks is, you know, the provincial government has stepped in and basically said, hey, municipalities, cities, you have until, what, end of June to revamp your OCP, your community plans, and we want to see more density. We want to see how you're going to accommodate this sort of thing. So all of these changes in the works are going to take a lot of time. And for that reason, you know, I think that real estate pricing is quite safe. But if you look at real estate as being a commodity that's going to, again, maybe double in price in the next 10 years, it doesn't seem like that's on the horizon.
Right. So maybe it is the good old days. Not the prices, but just the overall market sentiment. We're talking to John Carlson. You know him as Johnny Smartpoint. You can find him online, johnnysmartpoint.com, J-O-H-N-N-Y, smartpoint.com. You can also send him an email, john@johnnysmartpoint.com. And give him a call, 604-612-0080. And for people who are listening, the idea of selling a property, like maybe they're getting ready to downsize, maybe they're in, you know, sort of retiring, because I know lots of people who are pondering whether they're going to sell their home. They've been in the home for a long time. Your kids are grown up and they're thinking of moving. The idea of moving is terrifying, especially in this market, because like all of a sudden you go from being in the catbird seat where you're selling the property. All of a sudden you're just one of the other buyers who have to fight in this market to find a place to live if you're staying in the same place. And do you think that that has changed? Do you think that we're going to see more and more people, it's going to get a little easier for sellers to buy something else?
That's exactly my point, Martin. I think that, you know, we're on the cusp of that change right now. Going back the last couple of years, inventory has been a little bit suppressed because people have been reluctant, as you say, to jump into the market. If you're just selling, it was all sugar. You were happy and you were in the game and you were going to see the best result you could find. But if you were buying again, you know, I talked to many people, gee, I don't know if this is the right time, John, because, you know, I know I can sell, but where am I going to go? You know, like maybe if I go to Alberta or I go to the Vancouver Island or some of these areas, I can put some money in my pocket, but gee, I don't have many choices. And that was one of the restrictions in the market. So, you know, I think you're bang on that that was a fear for people, but suddenly, you know, it's not that much a fear. I think back to, I met some clients actually this past week that I hadn't talked to, probably in a few years. It was funny. I ran into the husband and, you know, out shopping. We talked and he said, hey, you know, I'm going to give you a call. And sure enough, they did. We went over there, had a great visit. And these are people who are looking at downsizing. And it was about 12 or 13 years ago, I worked with them when they bought the property. And it really struck me because as we were touring the home and looking at the improvements they've done, and I was, you know, kind of bringing everything into my mind so I could give them some good ideas regarding marketing and pricing and all these sorts of things, we started discussing the process 12 or 13 years ago when they bought. And I recognized like what a different market it was at that time. And it was a really, really a good news story. You know, these people had looked around and hadn't really found so much. And through some friends, they came to me and we started looking. We found a property and it was perfect for them. But we thought it was kind of overpriced. A great big detached house with a triple garage and other things that just really worked well for these guys. And it probably took us 2 weeks to put this deal together at the time. And we were reliving this process where we put an offer in, it was rejected. And at that time, you know, things weren't flying off the shelf. So we put another offer in very, very close to the first one and it was rejected. And we sensed that there was some motivation on the part of the seller. And without going into all the details, in the end, they bought a home that they were really happy with and the price they got was fantastic. And it just reminded me, boy, do you remember those days when you could actually play hardball as a buyer? You could say, hey, take it or leave it, or we're going to go somewhere else. And so, you know, just going through this process reminded me of the changes. Now, here's the biggest change. Back then, we were probably $500,000 or $600,000, and now we're $1.5 million. So that is, you know, that is the thing right now in the real estate market that is dictating how this thing will go, because affordability is a huge issue. It's driven buyers from Vancouver out to Maple Ridge, out to Surrey and all these other areas. And now we're living with that. I don't think those prices are going to change anytime soon. But the saving grace for buyers right now, and the thing that sellers really have to keep in mind is there are suddenly more alternatives on the market in terms, in pretty much every category, condos, townhomes, detached houses, all of them now suddenly have a little bit of supply, which I think is going to keep increasing. That's going to be the story of the year, and we'll talk about that in the summer. More inventory, more choices, prices staying relatively level, but you need to price properly, you need to market your strengths, and you need to be able to defend your price. When a buyer comes and offers you $100,000 less than you're listed for, you need to be able to show them why they should pay your price or close to it.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you might want to get somebody like John Carlson on your side. JohnnySmartPoint.com is the website. You can send him an email, john@johnnysmartpoint.com. And we're talking all things Vancouver real estate. And when we come back, it's when deals go bad, and they do when you least expect. And we're going to hear some stories about how things that look like a slam dunk might not be. That's when Vancouver Consumer continues right after this.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back. It's Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong, and our guest this afternoon, John Carlson, Johnny Smart Point, johnnysmartpoint.com is the website, 604-612-0080, john at johnnysmartpoint.com is the email address. And before the break, we were talking about how the good old days may be back. This market seems to be slowly returning to kind of a more typical sort of way of doing things. Maybe not the prices, but I wanted to talk about when deals go bad in real estate, because it's not always a slam dunk. Sometimes it seems like, you know, you put something up for sale and it sells for what you want and everything's great. But it's not always that simple, is it, John?
It's not that simple. And if you've been in real estate any length of time, you've had, you know, deals go bad, or you've had situations that are disappointing where maybe you and your client, the seller, think you've got something ready and done and you found a new place that you want to buy, but suddenly kind of the rug gets pulled out under you because the deal falls apart.
Right.
And, you know, that's part of this business, really. So it's not, you know, there's no crying over spilled milk. But I will say this, because this is a very interesting topic. Deals do go bad, or sometimes it's not so much they go bad, they just don't come to fruition.
Right.
And I think the first step, you know, if I'm representing a seller, my first step is to make sure that contract is structured so if, you know, limit how bad things can get.
Right.
I mean, for instance, when offers come in now, Martin, it's not like it was before. Like we say, we're talking about a return to the old ways. The vast majority of offers that I'm getting on my listings now are subject to financing approval, subject to inspection, you know, buyers reviewing title searches and disclosures and all these other things. And part of my job is to grease that slide as a listing agent, so to speak. In other words, remove any obstacles. I've got the title searches done. I've got, you know, I subscribe to a service that gives layman explanations about covenants and easements and all these things. I want to make it easy for buyers to understand what they're buying. I want to make it easy for them to go forward. So part of, you know, that's a big part of the process. But when contracts come in now, you're looking at subject to financing approval and inspection, these things. And there's lots of other little details in a contract that I may or may not have time to go into now. But for instance, when an offer comes in, if it is subject to financing, I'll give you a quick story. We had, I had a property, maybe I won't say which one, but earlier on in the year, and it was a really attractive property, you know, had a great view, inside was gorgeous. And we had it, you know, we had it priced what we thought was pretty appropriate. And we ended up doing very, very well. But the very first buyer that came through and the agent, they said, hey, we love this place. We want it. We're going to write an offer. It's kind of a mixed blessing when you get an offer on the very first showing, because you think, okay, wonderful, but you also wonder, you know, what's behind door number two, right? If you
right,
know what I mean.
Right, there might be more people, more money there.
There is, and you want to make sure you maximize the process. But for instance, this offer came through and they wanted to do subject to financing, and they wanted like about 3 weeks. In other words, the potential was there, talking about things going wrong, for us as a brand new attractive listing to tie ourselves to a buyer who wants 3 weeks to get financed. That's a bit of a red flag. I mean, how long does it take to the bank for the bank to approve you, even on a strata property where they need to review, you know, documents? That's a bit of a time. So the danger there would be that we tie ourselves to this buyer, and then at the very last minute, 3 weeks from now, they go, we didn't get financing. And that would be a fairly significant loss, because your first few weeks on the market is when people are the most excited. It's like fresh bread out of the oven, you know,
right.
new listings. So when deals go bad, the first thing, you live and die by a contract, Martin. And so when offers come in, you look at that contract very carefully. You want to make sure you're not tied up unnecessarily for a long period of time with someone who may or may not be able to go through. You want to make sure when it comes to inspections, I had another one recently where the house needed a ton of work and it was priced accordingly and we disclosed absolutely everything. And then buyers came through and they wanted to renegotiate based on the fact that everything we thought everybody already knew. And again, we made that deal happen and we didn't drop price what they wanted to, but the contract, the way you structure that contract, you don't want to be tied up to somebody forever. You want fairly strict and concise dates in terms of, hey, let's remove conditions within 7 days or less so we're not tied up forever. And then there's other things in a contract that you have to be careful with. It's become kind of in vogue for agents since this COVID crisis to write in contracts that the buyer can have access to the property at any time after subjects are removed and deposits taken, so after a firm deal, but prior to possession, which might be a month or 2 months down the road. And this kind of came from back in the hot days where you get a chance to look at a house for 15 minutes, you write an offer, and then you might want to come back and see it again after you've done an unconditional deal. So the intent is not always, it's not always a problem, but it's just become so common for agents to want in. And there have been situations, and I've seen a lot of them lately, where I get an offer in that says the buyer may access the property for the purposes of appraisal. Okay, fair enough. Measuring, okay, fair enough. Maybe bringing trades in, fair right. enough. But then they write the word inspection in there. And it has, a lot of people are not aware of this, but it has been tested by the courts where unconditional offers with deposits taken and a contract says the buyer may access at any time and it says for the purpose of inspection, they walk into the house, they presumably do some sort of inspection, they say, we're out, we're not going to come with the deal. And it goes to court and the judge says, well, seller, you've allowed another inspection at the last minute. And an inspection implies that it could pass or it could fail. So when deals go bad, since we're going back to this, it all starts with the contract. What terms have you agreed to? What timelines have you agreed to? And part of my job as a listing agent, when offers come in, is to really flush these sort of things out. I'm a big fan, Martin, of having buyer's agents on the cell phone and on speaker with my clients there. And sometimes you can catch people off guard just by asking very direct questions. And there are certain questions you need to ask every time. So how's your financing? What stage are you at? What are these expectations, et cetera, et cetera. So when deals go bad, it starts with the contract and you want to limit how bad things can get. And you'd be surprised some of the things I've seen in contracts that are presented to me that I look at and I go, oh my gosh, I would never allow my client to agree to this in writing. So again, there's where experience comes in a little bit, but that's the first step to avoid problems.
Interesting, interesting. John Carlson, Johnny SmartPoint, johnnysmartpoint.com. And talking about inspections, it seems kind of vague to me. If it's subject to inspection, what happens if there's something really sort of minor in the inspection, is that enough that they can scuttle the deal?
Practically speaking, Martin, there's no way to force somebody to buy a home. If they write subject to inspection, again, my job, it depends on the house. If it's a 1 or 2 year old home, it's probably not really worth talking about too much. It's almost like, you know, getting in between someone between their priest or imam or rabbi or something. You don't go there. This is these are sacred type things where a buyer may want to look at a property, and I would too, Martin, wouldn't you? Like, hey, I want to make sure what I'm buying is good. So as a listing agent, I don't get involved in that part of it. In other words, I give them and I advise my clients, we're going to give them their inspection if that's what they want. Trying to stop someone doing an inspection is a terrible idea. But we want to make sure they have the right expectations. Inspections can pull surprises, right? We see it all the time, issues that nobody was aware of. But even, and I tell my clients, a deal is never done until it's done. Once all of the conditions are removed and a deposit is in trust, and usually you want at least 5%, a nice, good, strong deposit. If you can get more, especially the longer the completion date is, the longer it is into the future, the more security you want. So if you've got a deposit and an unconditional offer, the deal's done. But prior to that, you don't really have anything except a contract and the goodwill of the buyer with usually conditions. So if, for instance, if someone were to come through your house and we have a deal on it and they do the inspection and they say, well, you know, your laminate floors, you've got a dog, they're a little bit worn, they're scratched up. And you might say, well, it's the same floors you saw when you walked into the house. I mean, that's no surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise. You still can't force that buyer to remove conditions. So again, until a deal's done, it's done. So it's all about goodwill. It's about greasing that slide. It's about giving the buyer access. And hopefully you've done your due diligence and you've spoken to the agent and you know that people have good expectations, the realistic expectations of what they're going to find in a house given the age. But when it comes down to small things, a buyer can walk away for any reason. And in fact, even nowadays, which you're probably already aware and a lot of the listeners are, with this rescission period in British Columbia, you and I could go and write an unconditional offer on a property and within 3 business days, we could change our mind and walk away and pay a fairly small penalty. So when deals go bad, since we're talking about that, all kinds of things can happen. Financing. You can have people that say, oh gosh, hey, we're pre-approved for $200,000 over the list, everything's fine. And then on the very last day they call you and they say, oh, well, you know, wife lost her job or this happened or that happened. And from our point of view as sellers, it's not practical to try to chase people around and find out, you know, it's basically you move on, you get a release and you move on. So deals can go bad, finance can fall apart, inspections can happen, life can happen. I've had situations where, you know, I get a call from the agent, there's a divorce, we're not going through with a purchase anymore. I turn to my client and I say, look, practically speaking, there's not much we can do about this. We need to move on. We're going to get a release. But again, it comes down to that contract. You live and die by it, Martin. And so a good agent will make sure that is structured properly to protect your interests, giving the buyer the rights to do the kind of due diligence they want to do in terms of inspections and financing and all the rest of it, but making sure that the seller is protected and, you know, at least, you know, in terms of timing, is everything is structured so that it's the best possible chance to succeed. And if it doesn't, our damage is limited and we're ready to move on.
Wow. And I guess I guess it's a different market now than it was 2 years ago. These are probably issues that weren't as important when the market was insane and people just were fighting to buy whatever was out there because there was so little out there.
And that's the, you know, the old story: for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And, you know, we had the hot market where buyers were getting grilled and buying homes and then discovering, hey, I didn't do an inspection and there's something here I didn't know about. So, you know, well-meaning authorities come up with, the rescission period. Now, my personal opinion is it's a bit like closing the barn door after the horse is gone. We're not really in that kind of market anymore. But any buyer can write an unconditional offer and, you know, be subject to a 0.25% penalty payable to the seller if they walk away from an unconditional offer within the 3 business day rescission period. And, you know, I can see some advantage to that, but I also think it opens up the door kind of mentally for people to think, okay, am I, you know, is this really a done deal? So once again, it's never a done deal until it's done. You got a big fat deposit. And I'm happy to say that in over 1,000 transactions I've been involved in over 28 years, I have never once had a sale of one of my listings where we have a firm deal and a deposit in trust where the buyer walked away. Now, I've had a number of cases where there was the threats and we had to get lawyers involved and this and that, but I've never had one that fell apart, but that can happen.
Mm-hmm. When deals fall apart. And that's why you need someone who's been there, who's been in this market for a very, very long time and sold, as he just mentioned, more than 1,000 properties. What are you, like 1,200 properties? I guess you lose count after a while.
I'm not sure. I can check the records.
John Carlson, Johnny Smart Point. Just go to johnnysmartpoint.com online. You can give him a call, 604-612-0080, or send John an email, john@johnnysmartpoint.com. Well, thanks, John. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
I'll be back. Thanks so much, Martin.
It's Vancouver Consumer on CKNW. I'm Martin Strong, and it's a crypto coinspiracy. I just made that up. And it ripped off millions of real dollars from unsuspecting customers. And it all started right here in Vancouver. Up next, it's the story of Quadriga CX. That's next when Vancouver Consumer continues right after this.
This is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Strong, and the intrigue continues. All about a cyber currency company that started right here in Vancouver called Quadriga Coin Exchange. This now defunct company that turned out to be a Ponzi scheme and left a trail of people who are out millions of dollars. It has also left a lot of conspiracy theories about where the missing money went. And this past week, the BC government filed something that's very rare. It's an unexplained wealth order against one of the co-founders of this company, Quadriga CX. This order basically will force Michael Patron to account for how he came to possess more than $250,000 in cash, 45 gold bars, 4 luxury watches, including 2 Rolexes, a bunch of expensive jewelry, and a 45 caliber pistol. They found that stuff in a bank's safety deposit box. The story of Quadriga Coin Exchange is a wild one. In fact, Netflix did a documentary about the company called Trust No One, The Hunt for the Crypto King. You can watch it now on Netflix. It's pretty riveting. Quadriga was founded right here in Vancouver in 2013. One of the co-founders, along with Patron, was a young guy named Gerald Cotton. Quadriga was basically a trading platform where people could buy and sell cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. You could think of it kind of as a virtual bank. And Quadriga would hold the currency and take a small fee for every time you bought and sold it. By October 2018, the platform held a reported hundreds of millions of dollars. Nobody's quite sure exactly how much, but hundreds of millions of dollars worth of cyber currency belonging to its clients. The strange thing was, Gerald Cotton was allegedly the only person who had the passwords to access the platform. And that would mean he was the only person on Earth who could access that nearly quarter of a billion dollars in cyber money. And here's where it gets even weirder. In December of 2018, while in India, Gerald Cotton mysteriously died. He was 30 years old, and as far as anybody knew, he took the passcodes with him. At least that was the story being told to the investors, who were now out of luck. But just before he died, things started to go bad for Quadriga. Earlier that year in 2018, the value of crypto started to tank. Bitcoin, Ethereum, all the other cryptocurrencies started dropping. And not surprisingly, a lot of Quadriga clients, they wanted to get out. So they went online and tried to withdraw their assets. But suddenly, there were delays. Customers were told they would get their money in a few days, then a few weeks. People began to panic. And amid all this turmoil, Cotton quietly married his fiancée Jennifer, traveled to Jaipur, India for their honeymoon, and just days before they left and days before he died, Cotton made out a new will, leaving his estate to her. So weeks later, when Cotton suddenly died at the age of 30, it left investors still waiting for their money with a lot of questions. Like, why didn't the co-founder of the company, Michael Patron, also have the passwords to get into the account? But the big question remains, where did that nearly a quarter of a billion dollars in assets disappear to? Altogether, customers were owed nearly $300 million. But after Cotton's death and Quadrigo's court-ordered bankruptcy and years of waiting, those people who held assets within the company ended up receiving just 13% of the money they lost, because more than $200 million had just mysteriously vanished. And this week, the BC government was grappling with the question, how can one of the founders of this company that went bankrupt, basically ripped off its investors, causing them to lose millions of dollars, how could he have any assets left at all? And that's the reason they launched this unexplained wealth order. It will force Michael Patron to explain where he got the stuff they found in a safety deposit box, that quarter of a million in cash, 45 gold bars, the Rolexes, some expensive jewelry, and a 45 caliber handgun. But it's probably unlikely that they'll ever hear from Patron. It's believed he now lives in Thailand. This is Vancouver Consumer. I'm Martin Strong, and up next, Canada's population explodes, and Donald Trump is now hawking Bibles. Those stories and all the other consumer news of the week when Vancouver Consumer continues right after this.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of the advertiser. The opinions expressed are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of CKNW.